So mother always was going to write her book, and instead she said she was writing the book in our hearts. And when you think how busy she was, morning till night, 15 hours a day. I remember once calling her at 1 a.m. because I was back east and I forgot about the time change. And she answered like she was asleep. And I said, oh, mother, were you sleeping? And she said, it's 1 a.m. and she sat there and talked to me about the problem I was having. And so she never really took time. They took the kind of time that you would need to put down all of her teachings into book form. And, you know, we can be kind of sad about that because mother wrote very well. And in the writings we do have from her, they are beautifully written. And it would have been so nice if she had. But it gave us an immense, incredible sadhana to do. And in doing it, I know that we all have grown so tremendously. And when you think the book just didn't start being put together a year and a half ago, it really started 50 years ago. And it started not only with mother's experience, but then she started having people, you know, recording her talks. Some people were transcribing her talks back then. Then when David came on, he accelerated the process, began putting out the journals that would have her talks within them. Then he and Carla started working on getting the transcripts done. Initially it was some of us, some of these people, typing up the transcripts, and then eventually we were able to put them into professional service to have them done, and then we would review them. And so there are people that have come and contributed over the years, you know, whether it's sorting boxes with Carla and trying to put things into categorize things, putting things into, you know, big binders, getting mother's photos together. All that work was ongoing over the last, ever since mother left the body 30 years ago. And it's been, I mean, it's immense, the foundation that went into building this book that could then jump off of that foundation and come into being. So we have to say that mother's inspiration, David's inspiration to have this book done, I mean, that was his greatest desire too, is to see this in fruition. And I think it was his determination to get all this groundwork done, and then him saying to us, I can't leave right now because I have to get mother's work done. And that really then planted it into our hearts to do it. You know, we couldn't just mess around with that. That was It was something that he passed on to us, and we couldn't let him down. So, but I never felt like it was a burden, this mantle that he placed on us. It's been the most incredible honor. Can't even begin to tell you. I know one time Larry and I were walking out in the neighborhood, and we just went, we are so immensely lucky to have something like this be the work that we're working on. I mean, who gets to do that? You know, who gets to serve the guru and do something that may end up changing lives and affecting people? At the same time, I've never felt like I have any expectations about it. My job was to help get this printed into physical form, our job, it's a team. And the rest of it really is up to mother. That's really got nothing to do with us. It's mother's from now on. And it always is mother's. And when you actually start to read it, and I'll go into now a little bit about, stop shaking this one around, how we put it together, you'll see how it was Mother's from beginning to end. And now it's up to her to see what effect it's going to have. And I know that even if it doesn't go out to the wider world during our lifetime, that each one of you, being Mother's devotees, whether direct devotees or Mother's your Karma Guru, you will be able to understand her teachings by having them all in one place. And I know that you'll find it incredibly uplifting to read it. So, after David left the body, and we had this given to us to publish Mother's work, I was just going to start right back into the project that I was kind of working on before David left the body, which is getting Mother's letters compiled, which is a relatively easier task because you just get all the letters digitized, you organize them by the saints, and you put them out into a printed form. And Larry said, I think we need to get the mystical crucifixion done first because it's the most important work. And I said, well, gee, the other one would be an awful lot easier to work on. and I don't know, Larry, this seems like a big task. And I always kind of thought that somebody else would be doing it. And then Larry said, you know, I'm working right now, so you're really going to have to take a lot of this on. But I have to say that Larry is really he had the initial vision and continued to have to help us see our vision through the way through. So his input was absolutely essential on all this, not to mention the other aspects of it. So he kind of says, well, Kate did the work, but it's not entirely true at all. And the main thing is that if each of us were to all of a sudden have this job of compiling Mother's teachings, I think each book would come out a little different. Because you're taking 900 talks and you're deciding what to pick out of I didn't look at all 900 talks, but you're deciding what to take and what not to take and how to start and how to have a through line and what to tell. And that was really important, those initial talks that Larry and I had about how did we want it to go. We really wanted it to be Mother's experience. Not only Mother's experience, but all Mother's words. We didn't want it to be a textbook. You know, and here is now what Mother says about the such and such, and then have a section on what she says about that. We wanted it to be Mother. You read it, it's only Mother in here, and it's her experience. And so Larry was really very firm about that. He said, like, I wanted to start with one of her experiences, like maybe taking the sacred Eucharist out of her own body. Start with something like that, her own experience. So, as I was trying to figure out how we would do it, like, what will chapter one be? So I was thinking maybe an overview of the whole mystical experience and pulled out certain sections and put together chapter one. And it was interesting because we got various reactions from people, but Larry wasn't kind of happy. He said, dump them in there. It has to be, and he also said, it has to start with Master. Master's the start of it all. And so my beautifully crafted chapter one, it went away, and I had to let it go. The interesting thing is I was able to pull in various parts of it in other chapters, but chapter one went away. We started with Master, and it was absolutely perfect. So it's really interesting to see how the vision kind of would shift a little bit. And then we'd all check in with Mother and see where it was supposed to go after that. So the way the book ended up is that the first three chapters are more of a telling mother's story, and then it goes into the teachings after that. So we begin with Master, then we go with her meeting Papa and going, and then the third chapter is all about her experience in India. And that was really a wonderful chapter because Mother has one talk where she tells the whole story, which we hardly have any talks where Mother tells the whole story of her experience at the ashram. So we're able to actually take one whole talk and then plant it into here, which was a great luxury because that didn't happen with the rest of the book. And then the rest of it ended up, because you have to have a framework, following Jesus' life. So it doesn't end up being exactly like maybe the inner experience, but in a way, how to explain it. So we explain it through the birth and the whole circuit of the seed. Then it goes into John the Baptist and the intuition. Then it goes into the, I have to remember my chapters. Then it goes into the crucifixion, the dark night of the soul, the resurrection, final realization. And that's kind of how we did it. Probably should say something about taking Mother's words and making them into a readable narrative. Now, as you all may know from listening to Mother's talks, and I'm going to give you a demonstration by my own speech right now. So you know how when you are speaking extemporaneously, that sometimes your sentences will be quite long. And that is because you're not quite sure what you're going to say yet. Oh, and you don't want to forget about this over here. And so then you come back to your point, you're still on the same sentence, and you continue on, and finally you might get around to ending the sentence. And maybe you don't. So as all of us do, that's how we talk. And that's how Mother talked. So we didn't want to take any of Mother's words out. But then you do start realizing that the person who has reviewed the transcript has arbitrarily come and put a period here and maybe started the next sentence with an and maybe the reviewer has allowed Mother to have that whole sentence. But when you put it in a book, my goodness, it's difficult to read. You've got commas everywhere. So we had to break these sentences up. So after I realized that I can break those sentences up, or I can take that so out, because that's kind of just a little bit of a joiner in this particular sentence, or I can take that and out. Because originally, like in the journals, we never took those words out at all. No and sticking out, no because it's sticking out. We took a little bit of liberty with that. The only words we actually changed were a few times Mother was talking about Jesus, and she kept saying he, and because we put another paragraph in between, we didn't know who the he was down here, we put Jesus. And that's the only words we changed. So everything else is Mother. And then we spent quite a bit of work thinking about, do we take every and out? No, we do not. Otherwise, it doesn't sound like Mother. I wanted to be able to hear Mother's voice when we finished it. We took all the ands out and all the becauses out. It didn't sound like somebody talking anymore.
And the terrifics. And the tremendous.
And the tremendouses. So, and I just did a soul, like Mother might do. So that's when we'd kind of check in and say, does this still sound like Mother? And once we brought the team on, and the team were already working with Mother anyways, Rebecca's spending years putting excerpts from Mother's talk into certain categories so that I could just grab those categories and start looking through them. I didn't have to look through 900 talks. Lorraine and Judy reviewing Mother's talks. It's been so essential to have them doing that because they know Mother. They know what she's supposed to sound like. They know what the words are supposed to sound like. They know where to put the periods and that kind of thing. So, and then partway through this whole process, I was still handling the transcripts coming in and out. And there's a lot of work. And Janice Stevenson said, you know, I could help with something. Oh, can't let Janice do that. She was an accountant. She knows how to do She knows how to handle a computer. She knows how. So I asked her if she'd do it. She took it over, and she took it over so wonderfully. I hardly had to train her. She just took it on. Big load away from me. And Janice just kind of became part of the team. I started sending the things out to her, too. And she was tremendously helpful. So
For the final reviews.
So after we got to a certain stage, and I'd be reading things to Larry, and he'd be commenting, we'd be throwing things out and bringing other things in and doing all that, the team kind of came into being. As I say, everybody already working on their own things. And we got this team together of Lorraine and Rebecca and Judy and Janice. And they would review the material every chapter that we finished. Okay, what do you think? Give me context. Well, maybe this paragraph would work better over there. Well, maybe, I don't know, this seems repetitive, that kind of thing. And then we'd shoot out another chapter to them and they'd comment again. And so that's kind of the process. I wanted to just talk to you about that process and how we did it. And then the other part of it, that the reason that we can talk about the team doing it, but really, it really was Mother doing it. And we all felt her so much. And sometimes I'd be working on a little section and she'd just uplift me to the point where I couldn't work anymore. I'd just have to sit for a while and just, and she'd really let me know when something seemed right. And she'd also, all of a sudden just point me in a different direction. Like, we have this wonderful database called OneNote that all the talks have been going into. She might just say, look up something rather, some word. Oh, okay. And then she'd direct me right to the talk she wanted me to look at. And so it really was a wonderful process of following her lead on all of it. And I think we all knew kind of when we were out of sync and something wasn't quite working right. So, oh, I guess the only other thing that I might mention that I didn't think I would be doing at the beginning, but it became apparent that it was necessary to do it. So if you had a passage that Mother was talking about something or other, and then you kind of thought, well, the next thing in the narrative might be this aspect, but this one didn't flow into this one. So then you had to go look for another one, pull it over here, and then maybe you had to weave them that way instead. So there was a weaving process that had to happen of the sentences that was something that I never really expected to begin with that we'd be doing. I was kind of anticipating it would all be like that chapter 3 where Mother spoke the talk, and I'd stick that there, and then the next chapter and stick that there. And it ended up being a little bit more, quite a bit more challenging than that, too. Because you want something that does flow together, one to the other. And we're saying goodbye to some of our long-distance people here. Are you all?
Are you all?
Thank you for coming.
Did you get them a book?
I did. So we'll just take a minute here, and then we'll pass it on to the next person.
You're going to do the first reading now? When you get walked by?
That's you're doing the preface. That's you're doing the preface.
So what we're going to do, I think, for the rest of the time, I'll
She should get to read some.
Sorry, Kate.
That's okay. We're going to do some readings, and we're going to have people talk about their experience of doing the book. And we might take a break. We'll take a break after that before we show the final slideshow. So Maybe if there are any questions from the audience right now, we can take them while we're waiting for our things to settle down. That's fine. I'm not criticizing anybody.
And you'll need to unmute yourself.
This would be nice when we have speaker mode, though. That way, when I speak, they come on the screen.
And if there are not any questions, we'll just get right on to the readings and to the input from the rest of the team. One more comment about my team. I can't even imagine working with a better group of people, except for those lovely devotees who work part of the team. I'm sure. I just thought that doesn't sound right. But we all just work so cooperatively, and everybody's ego bowed down before the greater work, and we didn't have any clash of egos or any, of course we've all gotten rid of our egos. We didn't have any, you know, people were, every now and then there'd be something that somebody would really feel strongly about. And somebody would say, well, I'm not sure if we need these words, or maybe that's a little bit difficult for the general public, or that might be a bit of ambiguous. And one of our team members would say, this has to stay. This is the hill I will die on, you know. And we would keep it in, because...
Of course, the team started with 10 people. We ended up with 4.
A lot of deaths on that hill.
No, actually, it grew to 4, didn't it? And a number of other people.
So, and then this maybe is a good moment. We'll have Honor come out later. That Honor designed the front cover, and she probably won't tell you that wasn't as easy as it may have seemed, since Larry kept sending her back to do something else on it. No, I really want the light coming here. No, I really want this coming there. No, so she had a whole process of doing hers as well. And I guess the final member of the team, we should think, is Mike, who did some work on the photos so that they would come out better. And Larry sent them to him often at the very last minute.
He did a lot of audio work for the things that went to the transcript.
And he did some audio work, too, that of transcripts that were so bad, tapes that were so bad that Lorraine and Judy were not able to hear what Mother was saying, and so he teamed them up in order to be able to get them. So I should also mention that each talk, we kept track. Sometimes there'd be maybe 10 talks on one page. Each talk was gone over again to make sure it was word perfect, so that we are 99% sure that there isn't a word that's wrong. And so that was a lot of work too. And anyways, thank you so much for everybody, and we'll pass it on. Larry's going to start the reading with chapter 1. Mm-hmm. No, that's just a little bit. This is so I color coded you.
So the layout of the book is that there is a foreword by David, 10 pages or so, a 4 or 5 page preface, mostly from the letter that Mother wrote, and then we start with chapter 1, which is what started all of this, what we all stand upon in the United States and the West, with going on to this great work in the West. So there's a picture of Master here, in the beginning, and there's a quote of Mother talking about him. He became one that was to be the guiding light of not only thousands, but of millions. And it is through his grace, through his teachings, through the things that he taught me, the techniques, that I went the way, and therefore I can tell you about them. The subtitle of this book is The Way of the Cross and the Christ. So she talks about the way a lot. Chapter 1, The Master's Disciple, I Meet My Guru. I came to show you the way. I went the way myself because a very great minister came into my life and he taught me the way. He expanded my consciousness. He expanded my heart. And he put a desire for God within me so strongly that it became a conflagration. And it burned and it burned and it burned. And as I went on, I went through many, many things in my lifetime. The master with whom I studied came with a great mission in life. His name was Paramahansa Yogananda. He was a man from India who came here in 1920 as a delegate to the Religious Congress. The first time I ever laid eyes upon him, he walked out on the platform of this tremendous big auditorium, those beautiful luminous eyes filled with the Spirit of God, with his hair hanging down, very Christ-like face, and Christ-like in every part of his being and appearance. Then he opened his mouth and he started to speak. From 8 o'clock until 11, I sat absolutely spellbound, listening to this man of God from India explain to me the truth about the Christ worshipped by the Christians in the West. And for the first time in my life, he really made me realize that Christ was within myself, equally present everywhere, in every single human being, in every atom of space, every bit of consciousness, that he was, in truth, the Son of God, the only begotten Son, but that he had come from the Father and the Mother God, and had taken on every form of the universe. I learned more about Christianity from my Hindu guru than I have ever learned in all the years of going to an Orthodox church. That the words that Jesus spoke were absolutely the truth, and they applied to me as well as to him, that they applied to every woman and child of this whole universe, that God was within me. It was this temple that held the living God. He made me know that, as Christ taught, the kingdom of heaven was to be found within myself, as was my union with the Christ. And he gave me a dream, a vision. He told me that I could reach out for that dream and that vision, and if I did so, that I could find perfection within myself. I could find the light of God within myself. I could hear his voice. I could feel him. I could become one with him. And because of the words that he spoke, he so inspired me that he changed my whole life.
Read your talk.
Oh, okay. I'll talk a little bit first. What comes to mind is that Babaji sent Master, he initiated that Master should come to the West to bring that mystical aspect that was so needed in the West to our culture and into Christianity as being the primary religion. And Master came and he wrote the Second Coming of Christ. He really brought that marriage of the inner teachings of Jesus' story. And that mother, that she took what Master taught, and she had her own experience. So God brought yet another new part into being, following this lineage through mother's experience. And that I was raised, very devotedly with the Bible and with Christianity. And as much as I loved that, I realized when I came to Mother's teachings that there was, it's always one step removed, that it's a vicarious approach, that it's, the Bible is inspiration for how to live my life, but it's always someone else's story, and I'm applying it to my life. But what was different about Mother is that the Bible and Jesus' story, that's your own experience. It's not someone else's experience. And I do think that there are individuals, and more as the years go on, and the decades and the centuries gone, that more and more of those for whom the Christian message is appealing would be ready for the next step, ready to make it their own experience. And what the mother's teachings can really help those souls to wake up, and when they wake up to that part of what the message is that Jesus brought, that it is a mystical crucifixion, and that Jesus' crucifixion isn't someone else's story, but it's your own ego, and it's your own journey back. So the reading that
that I wanted was at the end of the end of chapter one. And Mother says, but you see, my love for God was greater than my love for myself. My love for my guru stood out above my love for anybody or anything because I knew that he alone is the bridge between myself and the infinite. That without him, I could go no place, do nothing, because I knew that he knew God, that he could help me to that ultimate end. After his passing, I went to India, not to go to another guru, another master, but to get help for the work that my own guru had done. I went to India to get help. And the way that I got that help was to be put through the crucifixion myself, so that I myself might become one with that great truth which Master taught us. I became that truth, so that no matter if all the books in the world, all of his lessons, all of his writings, all the things he came to give are disposed of, taken away, torn away, still I am that which he came to take me through. I am that truth. I have that truth within myself. Nobody can keep me from giving that truth to all I need. That is what must happen to each and every one of you. You must become that truth within yourselves. My personal experience since Mother allowed me to be a part of her outer work is always that it's the inner work that these teachings in this book, it was something that Kate said to me that I thought was really insightful. And she said that Mother is telling her story, she's helping us to understand our own experience. That these teachings are new for the Christian world, and they're the next step. They're becoming that truth.
So I'd asked each of the people that worked on this if they would come up with a passage that they would like to read. And I sent the people who were in Canada that I'd have somebody here read their passage because we weren't sure if we were going to have audio problems. But hopefully they will be still talking about their own experience working on the book. So I asked, and Judy, later on she'll be having, Rebecca will read what Judy wrote about her experience. But I'm asking Jill to read the next section, because she's our minister. And we want to have her involved. So I'm going to have Jill read the section on Papa. So let me just make sure I find that here for you, and so I'm going to start there. Start there.
Papa comes to visit, meeting Swami Ramdas. I went to India to surrender myself completely and utterly at the feet of God. I went through a complete realized master, one with universal vision, who had indeed become, as it says in the Christian Bible, like a little child. And he had entered the kingdom of heaven. To him, his beloved Ram was everywhere. The bliss that he experienced shone in his face, and this power in his gentle soul was so tremendous that you can't begin to imagine it. I have come to know that Papa, Swami Ramdas, was the means of saving my spiritual life. It was as though Master had provided the groundwork, the foundation, provided the inspiration, gave me the steadiness in the path, the love for Papa in him, and the love for God everywhere. And yet Papa came and picked me up from there and lifted me into the arms of God. When you get to that stage, only such a one can help you, no one else. An organization cannot give it to you. An institution cannot give it to you. Nothing less than a God-realized master can help you through this final destruction of your ego.
Thank you, Lydia.
I owe great tribute to Swami Ram Dass, who put me through the crucifixion. When I say put me through it, I don't mean that he imposed it upon me, but rather he was the guide and the director of my spiritual progress when I was going through all of these experiences. Papa stripped me of all the things of the human in order that he might show me the truth of my soul, and I have thought many times what a tremendous service he did. And I have thought many times what a tremendous service he did me. But for him, I could not tell you the truth of the cross, the way of the cross, and the Christ as I have experienced it within, because he had the courage to hurt me, to put me through the greatest of tortures in order that I might find the joy of God and the truth of being. There can be no greater love than this for any man, no greater love. I ask myself, which master was the greater of the two? The one who nurtured me with love, who saved my life that I might come to this moment, the one who had the power to retain in all of their perfection the cells of his own body, or the one who had the power to kill the ego and then to bring that one, which could be compared to Lazarus, back to life? In the final analysis, I could not determine which was the greater of the two. I came to know because one time, toward the end of our sojourn there, Papa and Mother Krishnabai and I were alone in the room where I was, and I said to Papa, "Papa, you have your own special place in my heart. I have tremendous love for you, but I cannot accept you as my guru. Yogananda is my guru." Mother Krishnabai turned to him. She said, "What did she say?" And he repeated what I had said. She said something to him in return. I said, "What did she say?" He said, "To tell you that we are but the two different sides of the one face of God." And I later came to see the absolute truth of this. Two fully God-realized souls, each of whom did whatever that God, who is universal, required of them, that the soul might go through what it had to go through in order to speak the truth. I realized that it was his hand working everywhere, in every man, in every soul. I saw the universal Christ manifest as Christ consciousness every place. I saw him manifested individually within myself and in every one of his creatures everywhere.
Thank you very much.
Thank you very much, Kate.
So wonderful to hear Mother speaking about Master and Papa. I'm going to read this, but now I am. So it's interesting that chapter 3, which I told you was almost in whole cloth put into the book, Mother's experience in the ashram. And the beginning of her experience, every time I would read it, and I must have read it, I can't even tell you how many times, but especially the beginning when I read it, it would just transport me. And I would feel myself right in the ashram, and I would see it almost like a movie set, where I would see, and it's kind of like time partially stood still. And I'd be back there, and looking over here with Mother, and looking over there, and I could sense, I could feel myself there, and it so transported me, and it so uplifted me every time, that I thought I'd read it again. And I'm not sure that would do the same thing to every person, or was just something that I personally related to, having been at the ashram and with Mother, not at the ashram with Mother, but with Mother and also at the ashram. But anyways, I wanted to start. This is the start of that chapter when Mother goes through the mystical crucifixion at the ashram, and it's one of the most powerful chapters. And then there's a chapter about the crucifixion, which we are not reading today, because I think you have to read the whole thing yourself as well. So there's a little bit of introduction in this chapter. I'm not going to read, and then she begins. Now I will tell you my own personal experience. I have done what it says in the Bible. My husband Ralph and I sold all our worldly goods, and we went to India with nothing but the love of God and the desire to realize our oneness with Him. And Swami Ramdas, this universally realized master, put me through the crucifixion, the mystical crucifixion. This body actually died, went through everything that is described in the Bible, and came back to tell the truth. I got there in October, on the 15th, 1957, and I went into this state in February. I apparently sealed my destiny one night when Ramdas was speaking about all of the scriptures being historically true, and I challenged him, because this isn't what God told me. I said, they are historically true in one sense, Papa, but isn't it the truth that the scripture, every scripture, is a story of man's evolution from the human to the divine? And he looked right at me, and just then a tremendous bolt went through my head, just as if lightning had struck me, and he said, you have made him say it. And that's when the experiences commenced. It was under tremendous circumstances. I sat in the bhajan hall. All this preparation had been going on. We had been invited to a wedding. It was the first Indian wedding we had ever attended, and Papa saw to it that I had a very fancy sari. Somehow I was constrained to say to him, it is the last meal before the prisoner is executed. And he nodded his head. Why I said this, I don't know. But I felt this way about it, so I said it. So we went to the wedding, and a few days elapsed. We were sitting in the bhajan hall. And there was this little woman that looked like an angel. She was sitting in lotus posture, gazing up at him. Papa was sitting here, and here was she. And her face was just utterly filled with bliss. There was a man over at the side who had been there for several weeks, who had not uttered a word to anybody, and he sat there also. There were many men who had come in from eastern India. They'd all started out for a place 200 miles from their home, and all of a sudden found themselves in the ashram, and they couldn't remember how they got there. And I heard from their own lips. I heard from their own lips. And I said to Papa, what tremendous power you have in that one small body. And he said, shh, this is what we do not speak about. So they were all there. They were all sitting around watching, and I was there in half lotus posture. Papa had been talking about the story of the Buddha and the thief, and how the thief had stolen the jewel from the Buddha, and all of his fellow travelers had deserted him. He had been found guilty, and they brought him before the Buddha for punishment. And all of a sudden, Papa stopped himself and he said, Mother, if I'd been the thief who had stolen the jewel and you were the Buddha, would you forgive me? I said, of course, Papa, not realizing what he was in truth asking me, that he was about to steal my ego. The crucifixion was about to take place, and he wanted to know if I would forgive him for taking this jewel in the human sense, of putting me through this crucifixion and the death of the human body. And immediately I said yes. So I looked over at the side, and this man over there looked at me. And for the first time he nodded his head at me. in encouragement, it seemed. Having put my hands up around my knees, I was looking at Papa. He looked as though he were seeing something above my head. All of a sudden, he said, "Ah," just like that. And I went into the experience. I started walking the road to Calvary, the way of the Christ, and it was a terrific one. I lost all sense of normal body consciousness at that moment. Everything is hazy. Still, I remember it. I was in the Christ experience right up to now. Next, if Janice Stevenson is up there in our cloud, I'd like her to read her experience of being with this. And then Mira is going to read the passage that Janice wanted to be read, and that's from chapter 5, John the Baptist. So first, we'll see if Janice is there.
Hello, everyone. Hope you can hear me. I just wrote a few comments about working on the project, so I will read it here. I came to this project late in the final stages of editing and proofing. The many, many years of work and preparation for this book by Mother David and countless others had created a force like a freight train that paused briefly to let me on board and then powerfully steamed ahead, unstoppable. So many have been involved in this work over the years, none more devoted and focused than Kate. This was a job that could easily have become overwhelming, but Kate took it on, acting as a conduit for this divine project. She could be proud of her accomplishments, but in true humility, is grateful for them. When I was at Anandashram, what stood out for me there was the selfless service of all the devotees. It was the first time I had the experience of being surrounded by people whose first thought was not of themselves, but what others might need. Working on this book was provided a similar environment. Everyone involved put forward their best work, wanting only to bring into perfect fruition the publication of Mother's own words. And then there is the book itself. I had heard all these truths over the years, but never in one run, stating Mother's experiences and revelations so clearly. My impression after my first read-through was, wow. Wow, so powerful, so inspiring, so illuminating. Mother is quoted near the end of the book, "The time for knowing has come." And this precious volume, "The Way of Knowing," is given to all who seek it. It's my comments.
Wonderful.
Now I think Myra's going to, many of the Kate said to choose our favorite parts of the book, which was tough because many parts are your favorite, but I love this chapter 5 on John the Baptist. I just found it's, I learned from the whole book, but I really felt like I learned from this chapter.
Thank you. By some stroke of divine grace, I've had the teachings of Mother my whole life. And it was something that I never questioned once. And I know most people come to Mother from other teachings. And it's something I never want to take for granted. And as a child, it's not easy being imbued with a truth that not anybody around you holds in the same way. And so reading this book, and I had the honor to read through this book that came Kate and Larry asked me to read through, it was almost like, well, first of all, it was a little bit hard to concentrate because I was having an experience that the reading put me. Mother was putting me through something just by reading this book. And then when my ego could be involved, it was kind of like my most secret part of my soul and my life being exposed. And thinking this book could be read by anyone. And, you know, when you get ostracized as a child and told, you know, be told you're, that's not right, what you're talking about, you quickly learn to hide that. It's not hidden here. It's no longer going to be hidden, and it's not something that I can keep secret. And it is the perfect time for it.
I just want to mention that I haven't mentioned up till this point that at the very end we wanted some different people to look at it, because all of us, when you read something so many times, you fail to, you fail to see the same mistakes. You just read right over them. So I wanted a couple people to read the book at this point. And a few people read the book who weren't as familiar with Mother's teachings. Jordan Rennie read it. Dylan Drayling down in Arizona, who's a new devotee.
Okay.
No, that was later. So those two at least wrote, and there's one other person.
Right? Julie Hill.
It's a friend of Jill's. They all read the book and gave me their impressions. And then at the very end, last proving time true, we asked Mira and Adam to read the book. So Mira's involved that way, and she gave us some helpful pointers on a couple things. And Adam, who also would have liked to have been here, but has been taken away because of family sins. So we thank them as well. Okay, Mira's going to read for Janice.
Thank you. There was a man sent from God whose name was John. The same came for a witness to bear witness of the light, that all men through him might believe. He was not that light, but was sent to bear witness of that light. John 3. Chapter 5, John the Baptist, the voice of intuition. Everything in the Bible is written symbolically. John the Baptist came before the Christ, and he represents intuition, the still small voice of God which comes to the new seeker on the path. John is the grace or the gift of God. This is the meaning of it. This is the gift of God that comes through the intuitive quality of teaching the individual soul or disciple the truth. It is that baptism of the Spirit, the one who comes first before the Christ consciousness comes. This is what God revealed to me as being the real meaning. John the Baptist baptizes you with the water of Spirit or intuition, and that is just like a river flowing. At first it is spasmodic, and it comes and it goes, and because you are new on the path, you cannot always get the exact meaning, the truth of that which is being given to you. You see, the mind is being used there. The mind tries to understand, and the mind itself cannot understand. You can pick up the Bible, and you can read chapter after chapter and verse after verse and try to get the inner truth, the mystic meaning of that which is given, apparently as history. And you cannot possibly do it with your mind or your intellect. Man has been so steeped in his darkness, in his ignorance, that he cannot perceive the truth directly. As he studies, as he meditates, he tries to visualize this light which is within himself. He can make great progress if he will learn first to be the witness of this. It is that time that John the Baptist, the intuitive quality of man, starts his work of baptizing with the water of the Spirit. As you listen to this intuitive voice, you are inspired to seek more and more. You're not just wandering around by yourself in the dark, trying to figure things out with your intellect, but rather you are actually being guided by God within yourself. If your mind is always fixed, And if you will listen, he will speak to you. The more you have faith in it, the more you work with it, the more you fix your attention upon God, the more this will grow. Because as you practice listening to this intuitive faculty, gradually it develops. This wisdom comes through the trial and error method. You just don't get the answer right away in the beginning. Or rather, it can give you the proper answer, but you are not sufficiently developed so that you can understand what this small voice is trying to tell you. Or you choose willfully to ignore it and to go on your own way. You are not yet ready to be about your Father's business. The way you can tell whether or not you are getting the truth is, does it become prophecy fulfilled? When you feel something very strongly, does it come to pass? When it does, then remember how you felt when God gave you that information. And the next time it happens to you, lean on it a little bit harder. Put a little more faith in it. And pretty soon you will find that this flow will come until you are constantly in communion with Him, the inimitable and immutable Lord. I'm pausing when it skips again. On the other hand, he fed on honey, and this was when he was taken up into the heaven of his own being. The honey, of course. Sorry.
I think it was ending at the end. No. Invisible bee. That's okay.
Immutable Lord.
Yeah.
Okay.
You got your books today.
Spoiler alert.
Maybe we could have Honor say something now. Pop Honor up there.
Honor.
There she is. There she is. Go to the right.
Oh, is that Jana?
That's
Jana. I
have
my glasses on.
That's Jana.
That's
it.
There's
it. There's
it. She disappeared.
Right there.
Yeah, disappeared. You're on, Honor. You have to unmute yourself, honey.
And can you make her big?
She can hear me well.
Okay. She will be coming.
When she speaks.
Oh. Can you hear me?
Hi.
It's a good that I'm speaking now because my battery is running very low on my iPad. So, pretty nervous. I just wanted to say that the doing this painting was, I was very honored when Larry and Kate asked me to do it. And that lasted about 5 seconds when I realized I had to actually produce a painting. So then I got into the anxiety and just the whole self-doubt, everything else. And then, of course, thankfully, you get to realize that it's not about what I'm going to do. Just have to get out of the way and let God and Mother and David. So I had many conversations with David and Mother and God about how this painting should go, and had many attempts at doing the painting. Also had many conversations with Kate and Larry and Jill about what was needed for the painting, what was for the message it was to convey, and It was a wonderful privilege, is all I can say, to be able to do this. It was, it was just a wonderful privilege to be able to do something and hopefully be worthy of Mother's book. And I hope I've said everything I wanted to say. I guess what I really wanted to say was that it was a process, and that it was all about moving out of the way and letting the killing of the ego, as Larry was saying this morning, about just letting it go and be whatever God wanted it to be. I
I'm also wanted to say I'm very grateful for Mother for having these experiences and having them in these talks, and grateful for everybody that's worked on the book, and grateful for this path and for David, and I'm just so grateful for it all. Thanks. That's all I wanted to say.
Thank you, Anna.
Thank you. Next, we have Lorraine, who's going to, I'm going to have Rebecca read Judy's writing, because I asked each of them to write about something.
Thank you for your vulnerability, Honor. We love you. We love you all, but we love you, Honor.
sit there now, then Rebecca, sit there. So how are they going to get their people got in front of you?
Judy's not on the Zoom today. Is she?
She wasn't able to be on right now.
Okay.
So,
yeah. So this is email from Judy, and she even put emojis. So Judy says, "Hariom, everyone. Needless to say, sure wish we could have joined you all for this wonderful launching of our beloved gurus. Param Guru's first book, Mystical Crucifixion. My gratitude really can't be put into words. All I know is that I am so happy for our beautiful mother. Finally, her wish to disseminate these purest of truths, realized through countless years of suffering we couldn't even compose to imagine, has been realized. All honor, power, glory are yours, O Lord, the Yogacharya, Mother Hamilton's shining form." I especially bow before my spiritual sister Kate, who, because of her deep and abiding love for our mother, aimed at nothing less than perfection during this project, and just may have succeeded. I really was in awe of this Kate. You are an inspiration to me, always listening attentively to Mother as she whispered what passages were to stay, which ones had to go. Job well done. I am also so thankful for hardworking Rebecca and Lorraine and Janice, handpicked by God himself, and for Reverend Larry, who, although diligently working hours daily for our mother, just seemed to happily float along, appearing every once in a while to add, subtract, or tweak something perfectly. There's a whole lot to be said for listening to that inner voice of direction. As for me, working on anything Mother or David G has written is not work at all. It's a privilege and a joy. Selfish indulgence, you might say. Smiley face with red hearts. Always has been. Always will be. And now for a powerful quote that will always live inside of me. I came to show you the light. Blessings, Judy.
Sweet. So, now, I'm getting emotional just because it's my the last team member, my dear sister Lorraine, who's been with me in this whole journey with Mother. We came the same year, we became instant friends. We worked together on so much of Mother's things together. I talk to her pretty much every day. And she's going to read a chapter, one of our difficult chapters, of The Dark Night of the Soul. And when we weren't floating up in bliss with Mother, I think every single one of us during this process went through aspects of the dark night of the soul. We must have been, the oppositional forces were rallying around at different times. Each one of us was hit in a different kind of way. I know there's some author or other, even though we didn't author this book, the author says, oh, writing is not difficult. You just sit at your typewriter long enough till you start sweating blood. And, you know, at different times I felt like I was metaphysically sweating blood through this process. So whatever it was, it's, you don't know when things are going to become difficult, why it's difficult. But each of us did have some time. It was difficult. No doubt the ego is... Because this became our path. This became our sadhana. And sadhana can always be difficult. So in sitting at the computer, you know, it's like sitting in meditation. It can sometimes become difficult and the ego can rise up and... But all of us were hit in different kinds of ways, and some in ways in our own lives, some as we went through spiritual experiences, and some just the process itself. So, anyways, I dear you, your one, your turn.
This is from chapter 8, Purgatory, The Dark Night of the Soul. Everybody is aiming for bliss. We start in to meditate when we get to the higher states of realization. We are taught the techniques. We have a teacher of higher truth. And then the guru comes, and so we really go into meditation in earnest. We think that the sum total of what we must reach, what we must attain and experience, is the bliss of God. And this is not true. We are told in this book, The Dark Night of the Soul, this is spiritual sweetness, which people can become intoxicated with, and which will retard their spiritual development. This bears out what Master taught us, that we must go to God in balance, physically, mentally, and spiritually. Bliss is still an experience, and therefore you have not attained the absolute state of God consciousness. You must go beyond that, and in order to go beyond that, you have to go beyond this initial state of bliss. Until you get to the other side of this dark night, anything that you experience in ecstasy or bliss, so-called, is not authentic. It is not the truth. You have to go beyond that and become secure in the higher realm of the divine. Actually, you have to go through this valley of the shadow of death, which is spoken of in the 23rd Psalm. It says in the dark night of the soul that this is a good thing, that the soul at that time remains in darkness. This covering of darkness is put over the soul at that time, because such a one is in a state of darkness. But because of his total surrender to God, even to the willingness to give his own life, he carries with him a tremendous light. And by covering him with this cloak of darkness, then he is hidden from those forces, those powers which will try to get at him and destroy him while he is going through this state of purgatory. The satanic force, seeing the terrible trouble the soul is in, tries to get at it. If the light is gone, it doesn't realize exactly what is happening within the soul, that it's one day going to rise from the dead, to be resurrected, and to become the glorious Son of God. St. John of the Cross said, oh, what joy it was to go through it. He didn't cry or yell or think himself put upon, but he thought that God was doing him the greatest service in pouring his grace upon him, that he enabled him to go through this so that he might get the greater joy that was to come. And working for the last year and a half or more has been up and down, and you know, doing proofreading can be very clinical, just looking at words and making sure all the words are there that you're hearing on the tape. But of course, every once in a while you just get so drawn into what Mother is saying, and it's almost like it's brand new again. And very uplifting. Very grateful that I've been part of this. I wake up every morning excited to go to my computer and get to listen to Mother and do this work. It's not work, as Jean says. It's really such a privilege and such a joy. And of course, I also would like to say that thank you, Kate, for spearheading this. It's been a joy to work with you. And and it's pretty amazing that all of us working together, there's been no conflicts. It's been very smooth going. And when I did the final reading of the last book that you sent for the whole thing, I remember just hugging it to me and crying, just being overwhelmed with joy. This is out there, Mother's desire, her wish, had come to fruition. So wonderful. So, you're not tired? I was going to read the conclusion, and we can't end on the dark night of the soul. So, we just called the last chapter, conclusion, realization. This is my story, my way of looking at the crucifixion, because I was there. And to me, anything he may ask of me is as nothing compared to him, compared to what he has given me, the bliss of his presence, the knowledge of his infinite being within myself. This is not peculiar to me, nor to any man, but to every man. This is the hope that has been denied humanity, and this is the hope that is being given again to the world, because the Christ still lives. He lives in the heart of each of us, because he is with us always. How would I be able to tell you of all these things, of the real meaning of the mystical crucifixion, if I hadn't experienced it myself? It was a very strange experience, one that I had never really read about in the sense that I went through it. I never expected to go through in that sense. I wanted my God realization, but I didn't know how I was going to get it the way I got it. It is a tremendous price to pay, but I count it as nothing, even as Christ did, for the glory which came afterwards. I was lifted up into the highest part of my being, and I came face to face with God. The light of his presence was so great that it was overwhelming, and I was filled with such bliss as you could not possibly dream of. The one who attains the high state of oneness with him, in truth, sits at the hand of the Father, and has jurisdiction over all of the things of heaven and of earth, but that one is completely subject to the will of the Father. I come not to do my will, but his. God realization cannot be described. It can only be experienced. It says in the scriptures that no man has seen God at any time. This is true because man in his human consciousness cannot see God. But when he lifts his eyes to the hills, he goes into the mountain of his own being and meditates and prays upon God unceasingly. Then God, through his infinite mercy and grace, lifts him up, and indeed he comes face to face with the great light of his own soul. This light is indescribable, but the feeling of bliss is so great that no satisfaction of the senses which you can possibly imagine or have ever experienced can in any way compare with it. It is indescribable, and you never want to let it go. The bliss, the glory that I experienced was so great that I didn't want to come down again. I had gone beyond human consciousness, and to come back and walk among all the people of the earth in order that I might teach them the truth of my experience really took some doing. Yet when I was given that choice by God, there was no doubt of the answer. I had to come back. All were my children, because I identified with God in all. I had to come back. I had to teach them the truth of my experience.
Yet in order to come back, which incidentally took me 12 long years to come to the state of balance which I now enjoy, you must come down and function in human consciousness in this world of duality. You have no choice. The human ego has been crucified, but there must be an ego there, a sense of I-ness, a center from which you can operate in a human body. Because even though that body has been divinized, it is still made of flesh. It still operates in this world. It is dependent only on God, but the five senses have to be used. The 10 qualities of the subtle mind have to be used. So it is quite a thing to come down and function. If the kingdom of heaven and God are to be found within, as Jesus says, then you have to take the means within to reach that heaven within yourself, to find God within yourself, so that you may see his second coming out of the clouds of the heaven of your own being. There can be no other answer. If it were to be so, after 2,000 years, I'm sure we would have seen something more of a miracle on the outside than we see today. This miracle takes place in each and every one of us when we make ourselves ready to receive him. He is the sole occupant of the whole universe. He is the sole doer of this whole universe. And so no matter what, all things go to him and are contained within him. There is nothing but God everywhere. Lift your consciousness to the heaven within yourself and see his glory. He fills your being. He fills you with his light and he walks before you, making perfect your way. I come to beg you to go to him and to find that one who is your very self. I tell you the truth that has never been told like this before. But you see, the time for knowing has come. I have gone the way. I have paid the price. And I offer you this gift of knowledge. That's how Mother is. Thanks to Judy and Rebecca and Larry, we have a glossary and notes and index and love too. So, should we take a little break, Larry? And then Larry and Rebecca worked on this video that's going to be shown of more of Mother's pictures, so maybe we can extend our Zoom time and we can all take a few minutes to have a break.